This year's elections are raising questions about how Trump's presidency is influencing which candidates run and who voters will choose. While there's a lot of concern about how the Republican Party is changing and the rise of the far right, there are also big questions in the Democratic Party. Several candidates running for Congress represent a major shift in how the Democratic Party is running its campaign. Astead W. Herndon is closely watching these races. He's a national politics reporter for the New York Times. In his recent article, "The Districts Are Mostly White, The Candidates Are Not," Astead takes us into the minds of people and how so many people of color are running in majority white districts and what obstacles these candidates face. Astead, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how many self-identified people of color are running for Congress this year?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. When you go to the DCCC, the campaign arm for the Democratic Party, they have about 14 or 15 candidates who are not white or self-identified racial minorities who are running in those swing districts. Now, there's certainly a lot more people who are running in districts that are, deep blue or Democratic strongholds. But in the districts that we focus a lot on, the districts that will play the biggest importance in terms of who controls the House, that's about 60 to 65 districts that everyone's looking at. There's about 14 people of color who are running in those districts or the Democratic nominees, and about four or five of them are about people who are having majority white districts, are running in districts where the candidates are different than the voter base, but they still think that they can make inroads.
Why do they think they can make inroads?
Well, these are people who often come from these communities who these are just as much as their home as anyone else. And so in the case of someone who I follow, Lauren Underwood out in Northwest Chicago, that is her home. She grew up in this region in West Aurora, Illinois. And so it's very hard to tell someone who is from there and then spent their life there that they don't have just as much of a chance to run as someone else. And so when you talk to these candidates, they believe that they reflect the district's values, that they reflect the voters' interests, and that they're the most qualified. So kind of the basic reasons that anyone decides to get in the race. What is the twist here is that there's other things that they talk about, getting support from their own party, getting backing from financial donors, maybe some fraught interactions with voters that split on race and identity. Those type of things are unique challenges that they can face that may bubble up, but when it comes down to the core of it, why they're running, they truly believe that just like any other politician, they're the best fit for the district.
It's sort of an interesting visual to see these people of color who potentially will be representing majority white districts, but do they themselves, and I'm talking about the people of color, bring up race as much as their candidate, or is it the reverse?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when you talk to them, they kind of specifically will mention that they downplay race. They know that this can be an issue that people want to talk to them about, and they say they want to focus on the issues. They want to focus on talking about things like healthcare, things like the economy, things like President Trump, but they don't want to make a big deal out of the racial difference between them and the voter and resident space. Now, this is partly because they think that it shouldn't matter, but it's also partly about politics. We know that there are some issues that are the most divisive when it comes to the political space that they try to avoid. So President Trump has made big political issues out of things like black NFL players kneeling against police brutality during the national anthem. That's going to be something that these candidates don't really talk about. There's been other candidates who bring up things like the Black Lives Matter movement and other social movements that have come up. These candidates usually try to steer clear of those things because they know that that could be maybe somewhere where there would be daylight between them and voters, and they're looking for more commonalities.
You spend so much time with some of these candidates. Based on your reporting, do you think that they believe they're being held to a higher standard or a more narrow margin of error than their white counterparts?
Certainly. And this is almost always looking at their own party and how people perceive them. These candidates will often say that they think they have a much smaller margin of error than white candidates. So that means that they think their campaigns have to be, quote, excellent or top-notch. They can't have a slip of the tongue, or they can't have any of these flubs that we sometimes see from politicians, even all the way up to the president. I remember Lauren Underwood told me that if she thinks that if she behaved as if this White House behaved, she would have no shot. And that doesn't just mean because, of the words that, the president uses, but these campaigns think that they are proving a broader point, that if they win and if they come to represent these districts, it doesn't just say, that I am individually a good candidate, but it will change the way that the Democratic Party thinks of who should run and where. And so in places like Indiana and Montana, some of the whitest places in our country, that there might not be as rigid of a viewpoint of what type of people can represent those folks if they're successful. So they talk about an extra and higher burden that they think they have, that they kind of embrace as trailblazers, that their campaigns can not only help Democrats take back the House, but actually mean more in terms of shaping the party for the future.
So instead, they're embracing this challenge and they want to push the party's goals for the future. But if we could focus on the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, what factors does it take into account when it considers which candidates it plans to back?
Right. So the DCCC will never say we're looking for white candidates, right? What they will say is we're looking for candidates who are viable in these communities, who have name recognition or have the ability to raise a lot of money initially, or have ties with community leaders. Things that all seem quite colorblind, but oftentimes can have some racial implications. So with something like money, and the ability to connect with donors, these candidates often talk to me saying that they felt that was something that African-American or minority candidates may have actually a higher bar to, that they may not be as connected and in those high money circles as other folks are. And so it becomes more difficult for them to secure that kind of initial funding. Or if they're running a more grassroots type of campaign, will the DCCC look at that and still value that as much as someone who can self-fund their campaign or put a lot of money into that? To mention Lauren Underwood again, she told me she thinks there's no way she would be the Democratic nominee if she had a self-funder who got in the race. Or Colin Allred, who's running out in Texas in the majority white district, told me that the only way he thinks that he was able to be successful was that he decided to run so early. It was able to prove viability over a course of time, but if he did not make the decision at way before others did, he doesn't think he would have been able to convince the party to get behind him. And so these kind of colorblind factors that they identify still ends up putting a higher burden or higher focus on these folks. And they have kind of devised some ways that they can get around it, but they're still trying to pressure the party to live up to the words of diversity that Democrats often talk about.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Ested W. Herndon, who's closely watching a lot of elections around the country. He's a national politics reporter for the New York Times. And in his recent article, it's called "The Districts Are Mostly White, The Candidates Are Not." So Ested, the question of viability is always on the minds of everyone. Now, you spoke with Kamau Marshall. He's the deputy national press secretary for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He's also black, and he told you, "I can't see a candidate of color winning in a conservative area like North Dakota or South Dakota or Montana." Then the DCC itself challenged that after your article was published. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it was a really interesting moment. I mean, I talked with the press secretary you mentioned, Kamau Marshall, on the record for the story. And it was a kind of moment of candidness in which he said this, that, he really doesn't see candidates of color winning in these areas. And what I would say, kind of my here is that's a little sneak peek behind the scenes. I mean, that's something that these party apparatuses don't really say out loud and on the record vis-a-vis them coming back and trying to correct that. But that's actually not a thought that's just limited to him. The party oftentimes won't use such explicit language, but we'll use words like viability. We'll use words like, you know, we're just trying to focus our resources on places we think will be the most competitive. And what that means is the same thing that he ended up saying, that, you know, candidates of color who are running in these places are sometimes not looked at with the same vigor as other folks. And so what you have there is kind of a moment that, speaks really to the heart of the tension. In the story, we quote some of the new groups that have sprouted up since 2016, groups like Emerge America and Run for Something and Higher Heights and Collective Pack. These are all groups that sprouted up and said, we're going to fill this void that we think exists in the Democratic Party. The party is only focused on a small subset of candidates that have traditional measures of viability, but we're actually going to help everyone. We're going to help, you know, candidates who come from non-traditional backgrounds. We're going to help answer these questions that the party is looking at, and we're going to fill these gaps. And so when you hear, when I told that statement to some people from those groups, they were like, that's exactly what we're up against. But I would also say, you know, for the purpose of the record, the DCCC called after the article came back saying that they did not think that that fully reflected their opinion, and they, updated that to say that they want to support candidates everywhere.
So is Mr. Marshall still working there?
Talks to these folks, you know, that was something that is really an insight into how the party works. But, you know, there's a real pushback from some of these new groups to change that.
Is he still working there, your contact? Does he still talk to you, Mr. Marshall?
You know, he's still working there. He's a great, I don't want this to be just about him. You know, he focuses on a lot of the minority candidates throughout the country. And, I think that that statement could have come from anyone. So it's not just about him. I think it's about a sentiment within the party that he was being honest. And so I think that there's, you know, that actually speaks to the real tension there. And I don't want to shame him for that.
So what about Mia Love of Utah? She's a Black Republican congressperson. Does she feel like that impacted her win?
Yeah, Republicans are interesting because Republicans see, race and identity in quite different ways. So it's funny because while, you know, this is kind of a moment for Democrats where they have more, African-American or Hispanic or Asian candidates running in majority white districts, if you get a minority Republican, a Republican who identifies as a racial minority, they're almost always representing majority white districts. Mia Love's district out in Utah, it's more than 75% white. Obviously, you have Senator Tim Scott in South Carolina, who's a senator of a majority white state. But Republicans oftentimes, when asked about things like identity, are not as explicit as Democrats are in saying that it's a challenge. You know, Mia Love says, as she's quoted in that story, that she doesn't think race has anything to do with the reason why she's there, or she doesn't think that race should have anything to do with it, that she wants to talk about ideas. She wants to just, talk about the issues. And while Democrats say that as well, they will also acknowledge separate challenges that race, comes up for them. So for Republicans, it works slightly differently. And we should also just be clear that the majority of racial minorities in Congress are Democrats, and the majority of people nominated in the cycle that for Republicans are largely white men or white women. They do not have many racial minorities running. And so it's interesting for the exceptions, for the Mia Loves, for the Tim Scotts. They really downplay that issue, but we should be clear that they are still exceptions, and the party has not put as much effort into, you know, diversifying candidates as the other side.
If we could look out west, on the whole, this is an optimistic story, of course, but what about Representative Janelle Bynum in Oregon? One of her constituents called the police on her while she was canvassing in her own district for re-election. This is literally one of her constituents. What do we have to say about that? Is it just, you know, they know the name, but they don't know the person? Did they not know she was Black? She had a lot of campaign ads, and yet the police were called because they thought that she was a burglar or something like that.
Yeah, you hear these kind of interactions that can happen all throughout the country. So, you know, I talked to a candidate who's running out in Ohio right outside Cincinnati, Aftab Perival, who is one of those really tough swing districts. And he said that, you know, people used to quack at him.
Quack?
Because his name sounded like Aflac, the duck.
They literally quacked at him. That's horrible.
Yeah, literally would quack at him. And these are his constituents. I mean, he's an elected official. And so you have these kind of moments where even though someone is in a position of power, even though someone is in a place in which you think would give them, you know, name recognition and respect, that the kind of same issues of identity that comes up in all of our daily lives will bubble up here, too. And so in Oregon, you have that situation where the police were called on the woman who was doing normal politician things like door knocking. Or you have the situation in Ohio where he's getting kind of verbally mocked, even though, you know, this is someone who is, you know, trying to represent folks. And so
thank you so much.
I should say that it's kind of an exception. You know, most of the folks I talk to said that they do not.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're running out of time. It was great having you on the show. And I've been speaking with New York Times reporter Ested Herndon about his recent article, "The Districts Are Mostly White, The Candidates Are Not." Thank you so much for joining me today.